David Stockman served as director of the Office of Management and Budget under Ronald Reagan, was a principal architect of Reagan's fiscal policy, and a proponent of supply-side economics. He left government to work at Salomon Brothers and then was one of the early partners of the Blackstone Group. His latest book, The Great Deformation, is a critique of current economic conditions and a history of the economic policies that brought us to this state. Mrs. Stockman has been a vehement opponent of the TARP money and the subsequent bailouts of AIG and General Motors. His book is published by Public Affairs. I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Hello.
Very happy to be with you.
Why don't you feel that recent surges in the Dow Jones and the Standard & Poor's 500 indicate a positive turn for the economy? Well,
that's a good question. I would note this is the third time we've been exactly at the point we are this hour. Exactly 4,550 days ago, the S&P 500 was where it is this moment. We've had two crashes in between. Then after the crashes, the dot-com, there was a huge amount of money printing, reinflated. Then we got to a higher level, the crash of 07-08, and now we're back where we started. This has not helped the Main Street economy. It simply helped the gamblers and speculators on Wall Street.
But weren't you one of the original proponents of trickle-down economics? Why wouldn't an increase in the value of the Dow trickle down to benefit the average citizen?
Because it's not sustainable. If it were sustainable, obviously it would be a measure of an economy that's growing, of an economy that's becoming more productive and wealthy. But I would say that isn't true. There are today, you know, about 27 million people who have been flushed out of the labor force who are over 16, who are dependent now on food stamps or disability or other public assistance programs, or are just making ends meet by moving in with mom and dad. And that's what's happened in the last 12 or 13 years during the period in which the Dow and the S&P have reached the same level for the third time.
On top of this book, you did a condensed version in the New York Times in a big op-ed piece. And last week, a listener asked Neil Irwin about your op-ed piece. And here's a clip of his response. Rob from Brooklyn, a listener, asks what your opinion is regarding David Stockman's New York Times op-ed piece on the possible corruption of capitalism and is blaming FDR and Obama for so many of the problems that we face today.
So I disagree with it pretty profoundly. And I wrote this on the Washington Post Wonk blog the other day. I think David Stockman's view is fundamentally kind of nihilist. It's fundamentally he seems to believe that anything anybody has ever done to try and corral the excesses of the market are inevitably laying the seeds for some great collapse. I have a much more optimistic view, to be frank. I think that we can try and make a better world and try and learn from the mistakes of the past, and that it's a kind of iterative thing that we're constantly doing better than we did last time.
A nihilist.
Well, I've been called a lot of things, not that. The point is, Einstein once said that insanity is measured by doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. My problem with bubbles is they're not sustainable, they're not real, they're not based on sound economics, and when they crash, the innocent people get taken down, whether it's homeowners who lost their mortgage or whether it's savers trying to put their money in a 401k. So therefore, if what he is saying is true, that we were on some kind of progressive path reliably upward for and ever for, you know, for all time. Yes, that isn't where we are. This has nothing to do with trickle-down economics. This is all about money printing and massive debt increases.
Well, you're suggesting an austerity approach, and that also has been attempted before. It didn't work during the Great Depression. It hasn't been working in Europe. It didn't work in Japan. And it does, and now here we are. Are we about to make the same mistake again?
I don't think austerity is a mistake. Austerity is not an elective course, you know, like basket weaving in college. Austerity is something that happens to a country or a business or a household when they're broke, when they run out of borrowing capacity, when no one wants to give you any more money. That's what happened to Greece or Italy or Spain. They didn't say, hey, let's see if we can tighten our belt so tight that everybody chokes, you know, and trips and falls on the street. They were shut out of the market because no one wanted to lend to governments that were bankrupt.
But there were other reasons. Greece, there were all sorts of economic wrongdoing there. The United States is not on the verge of going the way of Greece. And yet here we are talking about austerity as an answer rather than perhaps the other approach. You're obviously not a Keynesian. So the other approach would be to stimulate the economy.
Well, when I joined the Reagan administration in 1980, the national debt was $1 trillion. It was 30% of GDP. Today, gross debt is $17 trillion, rising by $100 billion a month, and it's 100% of GDP, which isn't that far from where Greece was a few years ago when everyone said, don't worry about it.
Didn't the debt go up a lot during the Reagan years?
Did the what? Yes.
The debt went up.
This is why I quit.
This
is why I quit.
We've even had Vice President Dick Cheney say that there's nothing wrong with debt.
Yeah.
So this is not a Democrat-Republican thing.
No, it's both the Democrats and the Republicans have been free lunch parties since back then. The reason I quit, the reason I wrote a book when I left in 1986 is that I felt the Reagan program got totally off track. Taxes were cut way too much. The defense budget was utterly out of control. We didn't really reduce spending. And so Reagan and Bush after him, the first Bush, together tripled the national debt. I decried that. I said, debt is a narcotic. For the first few years, it feels good. It stimulates the economy. The economy booms. But then it becomes habit-forming. The politicians can't let go of it. And then it becomes debilitating because you can't carry it. That's where I think we are today.
Well, wasn't the prediction that the fiscal deficit and the increase in money supply would lead to high levels of inflation? Why hasn't that happened?
Well, some people predicted that, but I don't think that's the bad thing about massive debt buildup or the money printing. What it does is totally distort markets. It's driven interest rates to zero. That is good for speculators. That has caused an enormous party time and time again on Wall Street, but it has not helped the Main Street economy, and it's encouraged a lot of households and businesses to get in over their skis on debt, and then you end up with the defaults and the foreclosures and the business failures and so forth. So I think the danger of all this debt is that we're encouraging bad behavior. We're encouraging Washington to borrow too much, not pay our bills. We're encouraging households to run up their credit cards, not to save. Our savings rate is abysmal. You know, it's almost nothing. And we have a population that is ready to retire because of the baby boom.
Well, when you talk about the debt, the government debt isn't as the real issue, is it? It's the personal debt, which right now is at 70-something, predicted to go up to 77%. So that has nothing to do with anything other than people spending more money, I'm talking about on an individual level, than they have.
Well, that's the problem with policy for the last years. We have been encouraging people to spend all they earn and borrow all they can. And so I agree with you. The household sector, that's part of the diagnosis in my book, has gone way off the deep end on debt. And let me just give you the right number. In 1980 and for decades before, households, that is the American Main Street middle class, tended to borrow 80 cents on the dollar of wage and salaries they earned. By the time we got to the peak, they had borrowed $2 for every dollar they were earning on an ongoing basis. And that wasn't sustainable, and it's still almost at that level. And that's why they're, you know, why we're not getting another.
But does government have anything to do with that, actually?
Yeah, it did.
But you mean
how?
They?
Because they made the interest. Greenspan made the interest rate so low it fueled the subprime mortgage fiasco on Wall Street. It encouraged people to run up their credit cards, not to save. Savings disappeared. You know, it used to.
So you want to see us raise the. The rate?
I would like to see us have an interest rate that means something. This is totally pegged. This is totally rigged by the central bank. It is not a market rate that shows you supply and demand balancing. The Fed sets the interest rate every hour, every day. It is totally dominated by 12 people sitting on the Federal Reserve Board who are essentially running the world. It's undemocratic, and I don't know why they think they're so wise that they can determine what interest rates ought to be when there are millions of savers and borrowers and investors whose job in a market economy is to do just that.
When you were the budget director, didn't you say none of us really understand what's going on with these numbers?
Yeah.
Have their outcomes become more easily predictable since you left?
No. I mean, that's the problem. As you get deeper and deeper into this money printing and massive debt expansion, it causes, and that's why my book is called The Great Deformation, it causes massive deformations. It causes massive changes and twists and turns in the economy that no one can really understand, but they don't lead to healthy behavior.
You say that the doctrine of too big to fail was in place before the crisis of September 2008. Do you believe that when a major institution fails, that there are issues of systemic risk and the result is a contagion of losses?
No, I think contagion, if you take that word and look it up in the economic dictionary that would have been frozen, let's say, in 1988, didn't exist. It's a new made-up word. The idea of systemic risk didn't exist when I was in the Reagan administration in the 1980s. It's made up. Now, recently, it's a rationalization of Wall Street for having the Fed and the Treasury come in with massive safety nets and life preservers and lifelines to bail out speculators who, in time immemorial, when they failed the market, they got their just rewards. And if you don't have discipline, and if you don't allow capitalism to have winners and losers, if you socialize the losses, the system will get unhinged, and it is.
Well, some people will claim that this is a result of the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, and the deregulation process started with the Reagan administration, didn't it?
Yeah, and I agree that Glass-Steagall shouldn't have been repealed, that banking institutions are not free market businesses. They're not free enterprises. They're wards of the state. They have the right, to take your deposit and say you can have it any time and then go lend it and have it stuck out there somewhere. They have deposit insurance, which basically makes you feel you put your money there and not worry about it.
With the FDIC.
With the FDIC. And they have what's called the discount window at the Fed, where if they really get in over their skis and they can't fund themselves and have an emergency need for money, they can go to the Fed and get cheap money that no man on the street or woman on the street can get when they can't pay their mortgage. So I'm saying they are wards of the state. They need to be tightly regulated. And the combination of deregulation and easy money, money printing, the two together were toxic. That's what caused the bubble and the crash.
And you trace this back to Alan Greenspan, who was appointed as Fed chairman when you were at the White House.
Yes, exactly. And I think it was a very great disappointment. Greenspan was renowned at the time as a conservative economist and even someone who at one time believed in hard money, the gold standard and all that. He got on the Fed and the power went to his head. That's why I think the Fed is such a dangerous institution. 12 people manipulating the interest rate, throwing out lifelines, putting in the so-called Greenspan put, which says to speculators, "Don't worry, if you go overboard, I'll put a safety net underneath. I'll stop any market correction." He went in that direction, the opposite of what Ronald Reagan stood for. Greenspan really betrayed the Reagan Revolution, among many others, but he was one of the greatest.
I get the feeling that you think that the financial collapse of 2008 was a long overdue correction.
A lot
of people were hurt by it.
Of course, but a lot of people...
People who had nothing to do with any of this.
Well, this is why the bubble finance of the Fed and this massive deficit stimulus in Washington is so bad. The collapse occurred in September because a bubble had been building for 5 years. And a lot of people got sucked into the bubble, like, put your money in the stock market, I can remember them saying in late 2007, because we have a Goldilocks economy. Greenspan knows exactly what he's doing. He's the maestro. His disciple, Ben Bernanke, is going to do the same thing. People went into the stock market, and they lost 40 or 50 or 60% of their money, and they're being invited to do it again.
I remember that John McCain said that if he were elected president and Alan Greenspan died, he would just prop the body up in a chair and keep him as the chairman of the Fed.
Well, that's how deluded John McCain was, okay, and why the Republican Party is not worth listening to today on matters of economics. They're in the same boat with the Keynesians and the Democrats, thinking, you know, wouldn't it be easy if we just borrowed enough money and printed enough money and make everything better? I mean, from time immemorial, that has never worked. It always leads to, you know, sorrow at the end of the day.
Well, the Republicans today, the Tea Party Republicans, are saying the opposite, aren't they?
Well, they're the minority. When the Republicans,
you think the Tea Party is a good development?
I think on the economics, I agree with a lot of what they're saying. But also, I would point out that when Republicans were running the White House, you had Paulson in the Treasury office, straight out of Goldman Sachs, straight out of Wall Street. And that bailout was led by him. George Bush was clueless. He was sitting over in the White House, you know, wondering what was happening. The country was being run by Paulson. It was a coup d'etat by Wall Street. And, of course, they bailed out Goldman.
Volcker a better?
Oh, in my book, he's one of the great heroes of the history. He's the best central banker we ever had.
But there's been such resistance to imposing the Volcker Rule.
Of course. Do you think Wall Street wants the Volcker Rule? They've got the greatest, you know, gambling hall going that's been, you know, ever invented in human history, and they want to keep the casino open.
Now, where would people come to Treasury if not from Wall Street? They're the ones who know how that whole thing works.
Well, because over the years, there were many great secretaries of the Treasury. I name them all in my book, who came from either leadership in business or Wall Street, and none of them believed in these recent doctrines that say, bail us out when we get in trouble. Eisenhower, Secretary of the Treasury, would not stand for any of this. Ford's Secretary of the Treasury, Simon, wouldn't. Kennedy's first secretary, Douglas Dillon, his family was Dillon Reed. He never would have agreed to bail out anybody who got in trouble on Wall Street. That's then, when we had sound thinking. Now we have a bubble and everybody's in it, including most of the people from Wall Street who come down to Washington.
My guest is David A. Stockman. His latest book, The Great Deformation, The Corruption of Capitalism in America, it's published by Public Affairs. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with David Stockman, who was elected as a Michigan congressman in 1976 and then joined the Reagan White House in 1981 and then had his famous education. When he served as budget director, one of the chief architects of the Reagan Revolution, then he joined Salomon Brothers in 1985, later became one of the early partners in the Blackstone Group, and he has written a new book, a large book, 700 pages, over 700 pages, called The Great Deformation, The Corruption of Capitalism in America. It's published by Public Affairs. No way we can get to everything. But I did want to talk about the fact that you argue that we should return to the gold standard, and that the 1933 decision by FDR to get the United States off the gold standard was the start of the country's 80-year descent into destruction. Now, we've had some pretty good times as well. Yeah. We did defeat the Axis in World War II. We won the Cold War. We built the world's biggest economy. So eliminating the gold standard couldn't have been all that bad.
Well, the point I'm making is that when you go to wild money printing like we're doing now or the massive fiscal deficits, it doesn't have a negative effect immediately. In other words, it's like a narcotic. It actually causes economic activity to prosper and to boom for a while or even for decades. And so therefore, what I'm really saying is that we have now gotten so addicted to lack of financial discipline. That's all the gold standard was about. It's not about some magic of the, you know, yellow metal and all that. It was about financial discipline. You couldn't run huge deficits forever. You couldn't create new money out of thin air at these rates under a gold standard because there was financial discipline. What we're lacking today in our system is financial discipline. Everybody lives beyond their means, borrows to the hilt, governments, private business, and that is because our monetary system makes it possible.
Well, we understand financial discipline, but haven't economists on the left and right rejected a return to the gold standard because it chains government policy to the whims of the global gold supply? Can't it be argued that the gold standard directly contributed to the Great Depression, which is why FDR and leaders of many other countries killed it in the first place?
Well, that's the conventional wisdom. That's what the Keynesian economists have been telling you for, you know, the last 50 years. The fact is, the Great Depression was the stepchild of the Great War. Okay, there was massive destruction of financial systems, huge debts built up by all the parties, the winners, the losers. The currencies of every one of the great countries of Europe were practically destroyed. They spent the 20s trying to recreate financial stability. It eventually failed. And when we got into the 1930s, after a boom on Wall Street that was frankly caused by too much money printing here and too much debt around the world, we were the great issuer of debt to the foreign countries in the 1920s, when that boom ended and our export business collapsed. And remember, we were the China of the 1920s. We were prospering because we were sending stuff everywhere around the world, and people were buying with money they borrowed from us, just like China today. And when the export boom collapsed, that caused the Great Depression. All right, and it wasn't due to the gold standard or lack of gold standard. It was due to the collapse of the, the aftermath of World War I. And every war, historically, there had been a Great Depression afterwards. This one basically got delayed by a decade. That's all. And it wasn't so we can talk about what the New Deal did, but it didn't cause the economy to recover. Only war did.
You call President Nixon's decision to end gold convertibility in 1971 arguably a sin graver than Watergate. You say it's the cause of everything from the runaway inflation of the late 1970s to the swollen budget deficits of today.
It is, because Nixon wanted to get reelected. He told his aides, it's on the White House taping system, I want the economy booming by July 1972. And at that point, our economy was way overheated. Our imports were soaring. Inflation was rising. The old Bretton Woods system, it's not the magic of gold. It was fixed exchange rates, and we had an obligation to basically pay back dollars if the Germans wanted to turn them in, or the Japanese, or the British, in gold. That was the system set up by, guess who, John Maynard Keynes in 1944.
And that's why we had Fort Knox.
Okay, that's right. And Nixon said, I don't want that discipline because it's getting in the way of my election. So he went to Camp David, 1971, basically defaulted on everything we'd agreed to internationally for the last 20 years, and we went on basically printed money that any amounts the Federal Reserve wanted to print without any obligation to turn it into any hard asset in terms of a global financial system. That was the beginning. It took years and years. That was the cause of the great inflation in the 70s. Volcker was a hero. He defeated that great inflation, but unfortunately, we blew the victory. We put in Greenspan. We put in Bernanke. Now they're inflating financial assets. That's why these stock booms happen, housing booms, derivative booms, and all the rest of it. But that is not a sustainable policy, and it's one of the results of going off the financial discipline system.
Why do you think that a run on the wholesale money markets would have been a good thing? Wouldn't the losses have spread to the Main Street banks? As it is, nearly 500 Main Street banks have failed despite what we've done.
That's true, but there were 8,000 Main Street banks, essentially, and SNLs at the time of the crisis. 99.5% of them were solid. None of them had bought the toxic securities, the CDOs, the securitized mortgages, all the rest of the stuff that Wall Street had created in its meth labs, 2, 3, 4 years earlier during the housing boom. So I demonstrate in my book that almost none of this stuff sat on the balance sheet of mainstream banks, community banks, mid-sized banks, regional banks. The contagion wouldn't have spread around the country. The contagion idea is just made up as an excuse to go in and bail out the last two Wall Street hedge funds. They call themselves investment banks, but they were gambling operations, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. That's the only thing these bailouts did. They saved two firms that basically had dug their own grave.
And you don't think the United States government should have saved General Motors either?
No.
It saved 1 million jobs.
No, it didn't. It saved zero jobs.
Suppliers would have been hurt. Others would have been hurt.
No. The North American auto business, and I was in it, I have some knowledge about it, was vastly overcapacitated. South of the Mason-Dixon line, there are all kinds of new plants built by Toyota, Honda, Hyundai, BMW, Mercedes, all the rest of them. Huge amount of capacity there, and we had way too much in North America. Had GM gone down, it would have simply shifted work from plants south of the north of the Mason-Dixon line to those south. 40,000 jobs were shifted from south to north. No jobs were lost. That's absolute urban legend.
So union jobs would be lost,
yeah.
and right-to-work states would have gained.
Yeah, so what?
And the people in Detroit would have been in even worse shape than they are now.
Their wages were too high. The weighted average cost was $60 an hour for a UAW job in Detroit. That's $100,000 a year. They cost $60,000 or $70,000 to do the same job in Alabama or Mississippi. And who is it to say in the United States government that the people of Alabama who want to work for $70,000 a year, counting benefits, don't get to have a job because some union bosses in Detroit want to keep it in Detroit? I think it is totally wrong. It's inequitable. It's an abuse of the system. It's crony capitalism run rampant.
Well, the unions are already in serious trouble, and if David Stockman winds up back in government, they'll probably disappear. Your argument is, let's go, why don't we just ship all the jobs overseas, which is what we've been doing.
That
saves us even more money.
No, I'm saying the opposite. The reason the jobs have gone overseas is the industrial unions have pushed the work rules and the wages too high.
David A. Stockman, his book, The Great Defamation, The Corruption of Capitalism in America. It is published by Public Affairs, and it's about 800 pages of very serious thinking about current economic policy. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Well, thank you very much for the discussion.